Good afternoon, friends. This is Carolyn Evers. And with me tonight is Dr. Richard Presser. And for those of you who might be familiar with the work that we do in our website, you might be aware that Dr. Presser and myself work together. And we thought we'd bring a very special show tonight. There are so many people who love Mary Magdalene and love the story of her and Yeshua, and whether they were married or not, information about how they lived, what they taught. And we're going to cover some of this tonight, and I'm introducing now Dr. Presser.
Good evening.
I am chuckling because I just love the way you say good evening. It's so formal.
Well, it's a serious matter. I mean, it's not every night of the week you bring forth Mary Magdalene to join us on a show like this.
You know, that's really true, because what Mary Magdalene said is that she was going to speak through us live tonight. And before we begin, I would like the people to have some information about where they can find some of her beautiful messages in our websites and also on YouTube, if you'd be willing to discuss some of that.
I'd be happy to do that. We put together a website at the request of Yeshua about a year and a half ago now, I suppose, called IamYeshuaReturned.com. And there's a page on that website which has material from Mary Magdalene, and that page is called In Support of My Beloved. So there's some really beautiful material there from Mary Magdalene, some channelings from Carolyn, and just some really beautiful material. And also, some of you may be aware that Carolyn and I have been bringing forth a series of roughly daily messages, ostensibly from Father God, but really it's a little broader than that. It's been from Gaia and from Mother God and also from Mary Magdalene. And you can find Mary Magdalene's message. These now are up on YouTube, courtesy of my friend Adam. And you can find all of these messages at youtube.com/user/ Richard Presser, and you spell my surname Presser. And Mary Magdalene's message is daily message number 25, and it's actually in two sections courtesy of the 10-minute limit on YouTube. So there's some beautiful material on both of those pages from Mary Magdalene.
One of the things that I like about what she talks about is how she wanted me to describe what she looked like. And many of us think of Mary Magdalene as looking like a dark-haired, dark-skinned Jewish lady. And she describes herself as being Mediterranean. And she describes what she looked like, which I just think is such fascination for me. Did we have a caller wanting to chat? I guess not. I thought I heard somebody.
Yeah.
Yes. Who's this?
I
can hardly hear you. Speak up a little.
This is Helena. We haven't spoken in about a year.
Hi, Helena.
Hi, Carolyn. I was wondering if you're taking questions or not, because you have a wonderful guest on tonight.
Oh, indeed we do, and we are taking questions, but what we would like to do is keep the questions on our subject matter of Mary Magdalene or Yeshua or their life together. Did you have a question about that?
I don't.
I bet you could think of one. Did you want to speak to Richard?
Pardon me, please?
Did you want to speak to Richard?
No, I'd just like to listen to all this wonderful information, then.
Well, since you're on the air, did you have a question about Mary Magdalene or Yeshua or their lives together or that particular time period?
Well, I mean, I guess the most pressing question, were they partners?
Richard, why don't you take that one? Helena wants to know if Yeshua and Mary Magdalene were partners.
Well, there's very little doubt about that. In fact, if you look at the content of that website page that I mentioned, that page on IamYeshuaReturn.com, that page called In Support of My Beloved, I think that makes it pretty clear about the nature of things. And you'd have to say the Catholic Church has worked very hard to really destroy any perception that they were indeed partners. More particularly, they tried to paint her as a prostitute, which is pretty extraordinary given the fact that she was born of royalty. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's kind of interesting how all that's been painted. They were very much a married couple, and they had several children.
And then the bloodline, did it go through France? Did it go through the St. Clairs? Is that all true?
Well, the story, in fact, about their bloodline is much more powerful than that, because in truth, the purpose of their children, in a sense, if you could express it like that, one of the objectives of their coming forth 2,000 years ago was, in fact, to refresh the entire bloodline of humanity, because it had been interfered with by various groups that had come forth to, you could say, modify the human DNA for their own ends. And mm-hmm. so, in a sense, it required some specific changes to resolve some of those issues. And indeed, over the 2,000 years, the DNA of their three children has actually spread completely throughout humanity. And indeed, that change was necessary for humanity to be able to participate in ascension. The DNA will be reactivated at the end of 2012, a week or so after the December solstice. And so when one talks about the bloodline, there's this discussion about, you know, what you raised, was it connected to the St. Clairs or the royalty in France? And really that's a complete distraction, because the story is so much more profoundly fascinating than that. And some people stop and think, well, how on earth could the DNA of their three children have spread throughout humanity over 2,000 years? But if you sit down and do the calculations on it, it's actually extremely easy. It would have happened several times over. And we don't actually realize the degree to which there is this mixing of DNA that occurs over time. But the DNA of their three children has spread completely throughout humanity over those 2,000 years, such that the DNA can be reactivated at the end of 2012. So the story is much more exciting than the one that you referred to. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally. And what percentage of people on the planet would you say have that DNA?
100%.
100%.
Yes.
Wow.
I'm not saying here that every element of humanity's DNA is the DNA of those three children. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the elements that were, you could say, changed, the energetics have spread throughout the human genome over those 2,000 years. So don't misunderstand what I'm saying. You could take it as meaning that everybody has the detailed genetics, and clearly that's not the case. But the specific elements that needed to be resolved, you could say, has spread throughout humanity in that time.
And so everyone has the capacity to be reactivated.
Indeed they do. And the reactivation is returning from having just two strands of DNA today to over 2,000 strands, as
wow.
humanity had prior to the fall in Atlantis. Very few people are aware of it, but it was over 2,000 strands. And science wonders why we have all this so-called junk DNA. 98% of the human DNA is inactive. Well, there's your answer.
Hmm. That's enlightening.
Thank you. Good.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Richard. And thank you, Carolyn.
Yes, and we're thank you for your question.
My pleasure. Thanks for getting it out of me.
Well, we got a little crowbar over here working. Where Mary Magdalene and Yeshua are concerned, there is always a question to ask because they are such an intriguing couple, and their story, their history has been suppressed for so long, and this is the time when it's coming forth. So, Richard, I kind of forgot where we were. You were talking, I think the last thing you were talking about was Mary Magdalene's message on YouTube, right?
I think so. I think we'd covered that off. It's you were actually talking about the description that brought forth.
Yes, yes, and the fact that what she said in the message that we took was that her genetics was really Mediterranean, and she gives her coloring and her hair, and it was not Semitic, which I find very fascinating. That was truly her lineage, and that she was a daughter of royalty. While we're talking about that, Richard, why don't you give a little bit of her background, perhaps, how she was connected to royalty?
Yes, it's an interesting story. One of the three wise men, I think most people will be aware, was an individual called Balthazar, perhaps the best known name of the three wise men, and some may be aware that in fact Balthazar was, you could say, an aspect of the being that we more typically know these days as Khatumi, Master Khatumi. And so Balthazar was in fact the king of Syria, and indeed he was the grandfather of Mary Magdalene. He was the maternal grandfather of Mary Magdalene. So Mary Magdalene's mother, who was known as Mary of Magdala, was the daughter of Balthazar. Now, this history is not exactly well known, and Balthazar indeed was one of the Magi, which is the Magi were those who effectively carried much of the secrets, much of the knowledge that has been preserved from the time of the fall in Atlantis through until now. So Mary Magdalene's grandfather was the king of Syria, and through his marriage to Mary of Magdala, Joseph of Arimathea, who was Mary Magdalene's father, most people don't realize that, Joseph of Arimathea was Mary Magdalene's father, became the king of Syria on Balthazar's death. That's not something that's widely understood, and it's not something that we understood until quite recently when Mary Magdalene explained it to us. So, in fact, she is very much from, you could say, royalty.
I just love that story. Folks, we have an open line if you care to call in with your questions for Richard or myself. Our topic tonight is Mary Magdalene, and she promises us that tonight she will give some information. We'll be channeling her, and her phone number, the phone number here to call into BBS is 888-815-9756. And Richard, she's kind of pulling at my sleeve here. Do you care to take her message now?
I'd be happy to take her message. And she is saying, "There are many who have speculated on whether indeed Yeshua and I were married. And indeed we were. As Richard mentioned earlier, the Catholic Church worked very hard to discredit who and what I was for several reasons. Partly, it did not suit their purposes that Yeshua should be married and have children. Secondly, it did not suit their purposes to acknowledge that the group that worked with Yeshua, the so-called disciples, also included women. And indeed, I worked very, very closely with Yeshua throughout his mission. Much healing work of the type that Yeshua was doing works best when you have the combination of the masculine and feminine energies working together. And whilst Yeshua was the public face of the work that was done, I was, you could say, working in background with him to support the work that he was doing. And the Essenes well understood this. Those that were close to Yeshua well understood this, but it has been well and truly buried by the so-called fathers of the Catholic Church, who really wanted to take the story of Yeshua and use it for their own purposes. So the truth of the matter is very different from what has been brought forth, and there will be much more information coming forth quite soon in this regard. It is time, as we approach the end of 2012, for these truths to come forth, for humanity to understand who and what Yeshua and I were, why we came, what we did, and how little it has to do with what the Catholic Church has brought forth and you could say propagates. Indeed, all of the Christian Church propagates in relation to who and what Yeshua was and I was. So it is time for this to come forth. And the reason, indeed, for the Catholic Church destroying both the Templars and the Cathars at various points in history was because these groups were, in fact, living the truth of what Yeshua and I were teaching. So it gives you some sense of, indeed, the agenda of the Catholic Church. And I tell you now that over the next couple of years between now and the end of 2012, the truth of who and what we were and who and what the Catholic Church has been will become very clear, and it will shake many people to their foundations. Many of humanity believe very soundly and strongly in Christianity of one form or another, and the Bible as it has been brought forth. Few have done their homework to understand that there was that Council of Nicaea, as it is known, in the 4th century, where the content of the Bible was effectively chosen, and indeed in some areas modified to suit the agenda of the so-called Church Fathers. And at that council, all of the material which reflected mystical and metaphysical capabilities or texts related to these capabilities were removed from the Bible. And many of those are now available in what is known as the Gnostic Bible, because the so-called Church Fathers did not wish to bring forth any material which might empower the individual, which in truth is what Yeshua and I were teaching. Yeshua taught the only temple you needed was the human body, and that has very little connection, you could say, with what is taught to you by the so-called Church. that bears his name. So I wanted to, you could say, put in place a few foundations, and I would add that the knowledge still exists that will demonstrate the truth of what I am saying. And in truth, the reason that Yeshua and I came forth at that time was really to prepare for what awaits you at the end of 2012. This might seem incongruous to you after all that you have understood from the perspective of Christianity, but the truth of the matter is that we came forth for that purpose and that purpose alone, to prepare for what awaits you at the end of 2012 and beyond, for this shift in consciousness, the return to the level of consciousness and beyond that existed before the fall in Atlantis some 13,000 years ago. So this might seem a little controversial, but it's time for these things to be put straight. And so I am here to begin that process. And so it is.
And so it is. Richard, thank you for bringing that message forth. And as she was speaking, one of the things that I found very fascinating is all you need is the human body. And it reminded me of what we do with the soul healings, how people call in to have their past life, not call in, but work with us on the telephone for the karmic clearing command to remove all of your past life karma. But this idea of the human body, of going within, of being able to not only speak to the body, but have the body answer those that conversation. It's consciousness speaking to consciousness, and along with that, the speaking to the higher self. And so perhaps you might give a little thought as how that connects with what Mary Magdalene said about working with the human body and how we also connect with Father God.
Yes, there's a very real connection between what Mary Magdalene was talking about and she and Yeshua were teaching and the kind of things that we're doing in these calls, because the truth of the matter is what a human being is capable of is far, far more than we accept today. By and large, we have lost the true sense of what it means to be a human being. There's a, I'm just trying to think who spoke, I think it was Stephen Covey said that, and maybe someone before him, that we are spiritual beings on a human journey, and that's very much what we are. And that truth has been, by and large, lost by most people. And if you begin to open up that truth and begin to understand what's possible, then it is truly extraordinary what we can do. The human body has its own consciousness, and we can speak to it. Indeed, if we encourage it, it can inform us about all kinds of things. It can tell us what foods it prefers, what things we need to do to adjust our diet for optimum health, a whole range of things. Indeed, it has a sense of humor, as we have found in our work. And also, we have what is the higher self, the spiritual aspect, if you like, that we can connect with and communicate with. And in many ways, the truth of the human being is these three elements working together: the physical body, the egoic self, I guess, which is what we take ourselves to be, and that spiritual, that higher self. And we can today connect those elements together, awaken those elements, and begin to communicate to these elements and to have all of this work together in ways that most people have no idea about. It's amazing.
And I'd also like to mention that we can go within and speak to Father God, and Father God answers us. And so I just happened to wish to comment on that when Mary Magdalene talked about the human body, that what we are capable of. And while we're discussing this, I'd like for you to mention two things, Richard. One, where people can order a soul healing, if you'd be kind enough to give that mention to that, because there might be some people interested in clearing past life karma and understanding how to reach these things through the physical body.
Sure. You just need to go to the MetatronMinutes.com website. That's MetatronMinutes.com. And on that website, you'll see a page called, I think it's just called Soul Healing. And just click on the little menu bar and go to that page, and you'll see there some details of what we do on those calls. As Carolyn mentioned, part of what we are doing on those calls is using the karmic clearing command that we've been given, which enables us to clear all of your past life karma. And it's one of the things that all of us need to do to prepare for the energies at the end of 2012 and for ascension in early 2013.
Something that I would like for you to clarify, Richard, is I'm not sure people really understand what past life karma is and how it affects the physical body. And I'm talking in particular about how that is carried down to the emotional body, which is part of the subtle body or the etheric body around the physical. Perhaps you might take a moment and just explain what this past life karma really is.
Be happy to, Carolyn. I guess you could say the journey on this beautiful planet has been pretty challenging, particularly since the fall in Atlantis, where we've lived in what is generally known as this veiled consciousness, where we essentially forget when we come to Earth the truth of who and what we are. We basically forget all of our, the most of our capabilities as a spiritual being. And you could say we kind of wander around in ignorance. And secondly, there's been this intermingling of the light and the dark. By that I mean the light being those beings who support the, you could say, the plan of God, if you like, for creation. And those of the dark who oppose that agenda, who seek to take over the cosmos, to take over creation for their own purposes. And so there's been the intermingling of these two forces, you could say, on this planet. And so those of the light have been targeted by the dark, and you could say pretty much everyone has, you could say, come to, at some point, a premature end and a pretty difficult death, you could say. And such an event triggers a lot of fear and maybe some other emotions like self-criticism and a whole bunch of other things that might arise. And when one passes over in those circumstances, then these negative energies, you could say, are stored. They're held over on this level of consciousness. And so when we return, we reconnect with those energies. And they're stored in, as Carolyn said, the emotional body, which is one of the energy bodies that surrounds the physical. And those energy bodies are outside of time and space. It might seem a little odd to you. They surround the physical body, which is here in this three-dimensional expression of consciousness, and yet these energy bodies that surround it are outside of time and space, and indeed they're connected to all of our past lives. And so they bring forth those negative energies, and indeed the positive energies, from past lives. But it's the negative ones that we need to clear, because we cannot move on to another level of consciousness, to a higher level of consciousness, without clearing these past energies. And what happens is when we've triggered these negative energies in a particular lifetime, then the soul comes forth again with an agenda to seek to clear those past negative energies. And so experiences are set up in the following lifetime to trigger the experience of those energies. And because we've basically forgotten our skills, we've been living in this veiled consciousness, we haven't understood why these experiences have been triggered. Why, for example, experiences that trigger fear might arise in our lives. And so what happens is, rather than reaching back and recognizing there were some energies to clear, we repeat the process, and we do that at least three times, and we have a pattern that needs to be cleared. And what happens is, in this lifetime, for example, the physical body is a great servant. And so one of the things it does in response to these negative energies is that it brings forth alerts, you could say, to the individual that there are energies that need to be cleared. And these alerts begin by being relatively subtle. And because most of us are pretty unaware of who and what we are in a spiritual sense, we don't listen to those alerts. And so these warnings get louder, and so they turn up as illness and disease in the physical body. And our Western medical traditions, if you will, have not understood this, and so they focused on dealing with the illness and disease itself rather than understanding what has actually triggered it. So if one looks at, for example, cancer, almost all cancers are triggered by the negative emotion of fear. And where that cancer turns up in the body may well, you know, is likely pointing to something in relation to the source of that fear. Another example is that we have been working with recently is multiple sclerosis. And if you think about the nature of that disease, it's an autoimmune disease where you could say the body is attacking itself. And what's interesting about that is the emotion that is connected to the occurrence of that disease is self-criticism. And so you can see how the body has brought forth a disease that's actually pointing to the nature of the underlying energy that needs to be cleared. And so if you're aware of what's going on here, then if you clear those past life energies, then just as the body has manifested the illness, it can then turn around and heal itself. And so this whole process of clearing these negative energies and hence healing the physical body is something that's been forgotten. It was something that was practiced in Atlantis. And it was something the Essenes also practiced because they understood this. And so it's something that we do with the karmic clearing work, is to set up the opportunity for the physical body to heal itself.
Thank you, Richard, for that clarification. Going in another direction, we've had people come to our soul healing conferences, and it's fascinating how many of them have lived during the time of Mary Magdalene and Yeshua. They were Essenes. We're finding that a lot of them were Essenes and knew Mother Mary and Yeshua and Mary Magdalene intimately. And when we put together that website that Yeshua asked us to do, I Am Yeshua Returned, we chose pictures, and he gave descriptions about it. And I just wanted you to mention that as a trigger for people to remember that lifetime.
Yes, there's a page on that website, IamYeshuaReturned.com, which has photographs from that part of the world, and some of them, the specific locations, if you will, that might trigger memories. And so Yeshua worked with Carolyn to select those photographs, and then he provided text for each of those photographs. So there is a page up on that website. And if you give me a moment, I can probably tell you what the name of that page is. Just bear with me for 1 second, and I'll give you that page.
While Richard's looking for that page, let me mention our phone number here is 888-815-9756. Our topic tonight is Mary Magdalene, her life with Yeshua, and those particular times. Call in with your questions. There's some fascinating information that we have here.
Great, Carolyn. That page is called Our Memories. So it's imyeshuareturned.com/our_memories.html. And so there's photographs of Capernaum in Galilee, a boat on the Sea of Galilee, the synagogue at Capernaum, photographs relating to of the Jordan River, of Jericho, and so on. So, as I said, these photographs have been chosen by Yeshua in association with Carolyn, and they each have a little message that Yeshua gave to Carolyn to put up on that website. And so that whole page has been set up to trigger the memories of those who were there at that time. And part of the reason for this is that we are entering a time when our memories are being triggered. And the reason for triggering, or one of the reasons for triggering our memories, is that as we remember who and what we have been, then we begin to reawaken the skills and abilities that we possess as a soul. And so that's a very powerful reason why we want to reawaken our memories in this time.
Something else that I have found fascinating is on these conference calls, Mother Mary will come forth, or Mary Magdalene will come forth, or Yeshua will come forth, and they will tell the person, you know, that they lived with them, that they were an Essene, and give them particular incidents of the times that they shared. And I always find it so fascinating when they come forth and the people say, oh, I always thought that particular time was so memorable to me, and I wondered if I have known these individuals, and I find that so fascinating.
It really is. There are a lot of people that have that beginning of memory, I suppose, a sense that there is some connection there, but haven't quite triggered it yet. Very interesting.
And that's intuition.
Indeed it is.
Do you care to speak a little bit about the nature of intuition, Richard?
I'd be happy to do that. I guess most people would be aware that the brain is separated into a left and right hemisphere. And yes, there is the fact that the right side of the brain tends to control the left side of the body and vice versa. But in addition to that, it's the left brain that tends to be the logical, rational, analytical side, and the right brain tends to be the creative, intuitive, spiritual side of the brain. And those who have set up our education system and indeed fashioned so much of how we live today have very much focused on cultivating that left-brained mentality. And I'm very aware of that from my own experience. I was trained down a scientific path. I have a PhD in engineering, so I well understand that side of things. And yet the great truths don't come from there. And I even understood that in the time I was doing my PhD, I even in those days began to realize that it's that intuitive side that causes the leaps in, you could say, theory, the leaps of ideas. The creative side comes forth even in that so-called scientific process. But it really is, as you begin to walk a spiritual path, you could say, it really is that intuitive almost whispering side that is the source of the truth of who and what we are. It's that aspect that informs us as we move forward. It guides us. It is that aspect that brings forth the ability to communicate with the physical body, with our higher selves, with beings on the other side of the veil, you could say. And so a big part of beginning to open up your spiritual abilities is beginning to trust that intuitive aspect. If you trust that side and give it some space, you could say, to breathe, to open up, to express itself, then so much can unfold in your life. And if you allow the left brain to kick in and question it and analyze it and try and make sense of it, then you will just destroy it. That's the nature of things.
And I would like to add to that, if you might, when you start questioning what you're receiving, what happens to what side of the brain are you working from, Richard?
Well, the questioning, of course, puts you back in the left side of the brain, and so you shut down that intuitive side, particularly given how we have lived, for the last few thousand years, I guess you could say. Those who have set up our culture, if you will, and our teaching processes and so on, have given a focus on developing that left brain capability. So it's much more powerful in most of us than that right side. And so it just destroys, you could say, what begins to come forth from the right side of the brain. And it takes focus and discipline to reawaken that intuitive, that wisdom source, if you will, that begins to come forth.
Well, I just love your answer. Thank you. Perhaps you might take a step further and discuss meditation. How most people are taught how to meditate and why they kind of step off the path, so to speak.
It's very funny. Almost everyone who comes on to one of our soul healing calls, when we ask them, you know, do they meditate, most of them have had a shot at meditation and most of them don't practice it anymore because they have bought into the notion that the process of meditation should be about stilling the mind and then allowing things to come forth from that stilled mind. And yes, there is certainly, that is an approach, and it is an approach that's come out of the Indian traditions, you could say. But I have to say that if that is the measure of being successful in meditation, then I would have to assess myself as an abject failure, and I think Carolyn is in the same place. My mind has never been stilled, and I tell you, I worked very hard in it for a lot of years. And I came to understand that really the objective of meditation is not to still the mind, not at all. It's actually about opening up to that right brain side in part, and also to guide and direct what you want to unfold. For example, you might want to, as you begin to open up the kind of skills we're talking about, you might want to have a conversation with your physical body. You might want to have a conversation with your higher self or a being on the other side of the veil. All of those things we can all do quite readily when we understand how to do it. And that's not a passive, still process. It's an active process where you choose the path and you drive it. And so that's a very different view of meditation than most people are taught. And it's a very different outcome also. And much more, I have to say, much more satisfying than the notion of sitting trying to still the brain, still the mind with some hope that something would suddenly spring forth from it. It's a nonsense as far as I'm concerned. I mean, some people do find benefit from that approach, but really it's a very painful process that by and large most people try for a while and give up on. And there's so much to be opened up if you understand the possibilities, if you just take some time to calm the mind, calm the body down, and allow the brainwaves, if you will, to settle a little, and then guide your mind to where you want it to go, to open up, to direct it, as I say, to the particular purposes that you have in mind. So it's a very, very different approach to meditation than we find most people are today trying to work with.
I would like to give an example, for instance, when I discuss this with people. And when I ask someone if, when the telephone rings, they have some thought as to who might be calling, so many people say, yeah, I have that quite frequently. The phone rings, I think of somebody, and I pick it up and say hello, and there they are. This is your intuition working. I had a gentleman today say, I thought about calling somebody, and before I could call them, my phone rang, and there the person was. There's intuition. Two people connecting with each other's consciousness. And we have situations like this every day. You know, some people might say, oh, I had a hunch. I had a gut feeling. We talk about this a lot. This is our intuition. And as Richard is saying, perhaps in different words than I am saying, but meaning the same thing, we have to trust that because of the way the brain is divided. Once we start asking questions, oh, is that really so-and-so on the phone? Why, you come back with a different answer because the left side of the brain gets very confused with spiritual information. It doesn't know how to process it. And we just have found that when you take a different approach to how you meditate, that you're speaking to one consciousness to another, you speaking to your body and your body answering you. That reminds me of something, Richard, I just thought was so funny. We were working with a lady, and one of the questions that I have people ask their body, what foods do you want? In other words, we're trying to get information from a body, the foods that agrees with them, the foods does not agree with them, what they're not eating enough of. And the body told the lady to eat more vegetables and fruits. And then when I asked her to ask the body, what should you reduce in eating? The body came back with the answer. Now, they're picking this up intuitively. Cucumbers. And we know that cucumbers is a vegetable, and the body had just said, eat more vegetables. And the lady came back and said, well, gee, she eats so many cucumbers. She couldn't understand why the body was saying that. And then we started asking the body some other questions, and it turned out she was eating so many cucumbers that the body was becoming unbalanced and acidic instead of balanced. And I chuckle at that. And Richard says how the body has humor. And I just love it when I ask my body a question, it says it wants to give the answer to Richard.
It is funny. It does happen for sure.
And I just chuckle at that. So, we're quiet out there, not calling in with questions, and I'm hoping that it's because you're so fascinated by the information that you're not stopping to call. But we have 5 more minutes for the show, and if you're sitting out there and you've got a question, a burning question, and you just happen to be sitting back listening to us, now's the time to call. 888-815-9756. So, Richard, is there something that comes to mind during these last couple moments that perhaps I forgot to cover that you think would be an interesting thought about Mary Magdalene and Yeshua. Perhaps, I just thought just occurred to me, about the sacred relationship.
Well, that's an aspect, and that's a whole subject in itself. But I think the thing that I would probably touch on is that most people still are not aware that Yeshua didn't actually die at the time of the crucifixion, and he survived that experience, and he and Mary Magdalene lived on in France for some years, and that knowledge was well understood again by the Cathars and by others, and that knowledge, I anticipate, will come forth between now and the end of 2012. And so I think that's perhaps one of the most exciting aspects of what their life was about. And yes, I'm not sure what to add after that, Carol. I mean, the sacred relationship is an interesting area. The whole subject of what's possible in a relationship between a man and a woman.
We have a call, Richard. Maybe we can get an answer in real quick. We have two minutes. And what is your name, caller?
Hi there. This is June. I wanted to tell you how much I'm enjoying the show.
Hi, June. Now, do you have a question? Because we've got like 2 minutes. Or did you just call
maybe
to say you enjoyed the show?
Yeah, and that I was putzing around and I got this call, look at BBS, and there you were. So my intuition told me to listen.
Bless you. Your intuition was working, wasn't it?
It really was. And I wanted to also say that I'm glad you talked about the meditation, because I had given up on meditating, and that's when I met Mikael is on one of my, okay, I can't just be still, I want to go on a journey, and there was this blue angel with a baseball hat on wanting to talk to me. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I love when he comes on the conference calls with that baseball hat. That's kind of funny.
That was great to hear your show and you mentioned that. I was like, oh, that's the same angel I met. But thank you for talking about that stilling the mind thing, because I'd given up on meditating because my mind would never be still. Thank you.
June, there's a lot of people who have that same experience. It's one of the hardest things that people can do, trying to still their mind. They want to meditate, and then they give up, and it's a real pity, because what you can learn
mm-hmm.
by actively meditating is just beautiful. Well, my dear,
mm-hmm.
June, thank you so much.
Namaste.
Namaste, dear. And so, my friends, an hour sure does go by fast, doesn't it? Doesn't it, Richard?
It does indeed.
We're at the end. Real quick, Richard, as we're leaving, why don't you give the address for our 2012 website?
Yes, it's the 2012countdown.com, which has just lots of information about what 2012 is all about and what will be unfolding at that time.
Richard, thank you so much. I enjoyed having you here and talking about Mary Magdalene. And until the next time, my friends, blessings to all of you.
Thank you, Carolyn.
You're welcome. Goodbye for now.